Through the huts of history's shame, I rise. Up from a past that's rooted in pain, I rise. I'm a black ocean, leaping and wide, welling and swelling, I bear the tide. Leaving behind the nights of terror and fear, I rise into a daybreak that's wondrously clear, I rise. Bringing the gifts that my precious ancestors gave, I am the dream and the hope of the slaves.
Walk.
I rise.
Listen, an attempt to connect people and make this world a bit better by sharing opinions and experiences based on the belief that everyone's perspective is true, albeit partial. My name is Maurice Bloem, and I would like to welcome you to yet another episode. Yes, good day everybody. This is another episode of the podcast Walk, Talk, Listen, live from New York during the CSW 68. I think we are now at episode 7, if I'm not mistaken. I'm delighted with the guest who was sitting in front of me. Elizabeth, please introduce yourself.
Yes, good afternoon. Thank you very much for this opportunity. My name is Elizabeth Urio, and I was born in Tanzania and raised in Nigeria, and I've had the privilege of working in R&D in the U.S. food industry for many years, and more recently with NGOs dedicated to eradicating hunger and poverty in developing countries, especially amongst children and women. I currently serve the Congressional Hunger Center based in D.C. as the Chief of Staff and Director for the Mickey Leland Hunger Fellowship, where we focus on engaging and equipping emerging leaders, especially the leaders of color and those with lived experience in hunger and poverty, to not only design but implement and evaluate programmatic solutions to hunger and poverty, and to do this work in a very participatory manner that employs a gender lens. And then as they're doing this work, to really look for opportunities to amplify the voices of those they serve so they can end hunger, achieve food security, and improve nutrition as they promote sustainable climate-smart agriculture. So that's who I am. And I want to add that we could not do this work without the partnership of generous and like-minded INGOs like CARE, Oxfam, Helen Keller International, ACDI VOCA, Venture 37, IDEA Global, Catholic Relief Services, World Vision, Interaction, and so many more.
Great. Yeah. And Elizabeth and I met for the first time during a panel that we were on Tuesday of this week, organized by the Jishu Foundation, right? So, and what I understood from Steve, who was responsible for recording the whole panel, is that it will be broadcasted at some point. So I keep an eye on that for the listeners. Elizabeth, what I always ask during this week is to get to know people a little bit. Is this the first time you were attending a CSW, or you have been for several times?
No, this is the very first time, and it's been mind-blowing,
wow.
Maurice.
Okay.
An incredible experience.
Yeah. And what do you hope, will happen during this week?
Well, I hope that people will have a chance to hear about other people's lived experiences. Mm-hmm. I hope that those who have been in this work and in this fight will be encouraged by the progress that's being made, but they will also be encouraged in knowing that they're not fighting alone. And I hope that those who were not able to physically come and attend in person will be able, as you mentioned, to view some of the content that has been recorded and glean some maybe insights, maybe some fresh ideas, maybe some new connections, because we can't do this work alone.
Yeah. And did you come here with a specific task or plan in mind? Or are you here, as you mentioned also, more to learn and to be inspired and to listen?
Maurice, it's really the latter. I came here an open book saying, I'm here to listen and learn.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Okay. And so far, is there a person or was there an event that you attended where you think like, oh, this is so far, this has been, most inspirational, or this is something that I would like to mention to the listeners?
Yes, thank you for that question. There are so many incredibly powerful presentations. I actually mm-hmm. just walked down from one where some young children, mm-hmm. I mean, they looked like they were 7, 8, 9, 10, were upstairs on the 11th floor above us, wow. presenting even as we speak. And that is powerful. But the one that really touched me was a presentation that was given earlier this week about the plight of the women and children in Palestine. And they were mm-hmm. sharing some of the videos about the atrocities that were going on in that area. And as a mother mm-hmm. of three, hearing that some women were having to deliver their children through cesarean section without any anesthetic, it's just, I can't even conceive what that is like. I have had C-section, so I know what the pain is with drugs. To think about the doctor telling me I have to have it without drugs mm. is unbelievable. And so whether it is Palestine or it's the Congo or it's Myanmar, just hearing about the atrocities mm. and humanizing those experiences and knowing that those atrocities are man-made and can be prevented has been really, it's marked me.
Yeah.
We need to do more.
Thanks for sharing that. And my apologies that I'm taking you away from that session with all those children. We are living in 2024, and even if you go to the website of CSW68, it mentions that it is a significant year for the elections globally for many countries. Some countries already went through it, Netherlands, Argentina. But there are other countries where, 2024 will be about elections. So what about your country? And what are your, or maybe you don't agree, that the elections might be of importance for our work around gender equality?
Yeah. So I consider Tanzania and mm-hmm. the U.S. my country because mm-hmm. I was born in Tanzania, but I've spent a significant part of my career life here in the mm-hmm. U.S. So irrespective of where we find ourselves and we call our countries, I think participating in the electoral process is everybody's responsibility. Mm-hmm. If we think about the right to vote, many people have fought, given up their lives in mm-hmm. order for us to be able to vote. And so I want to encourage myself first, mm-hmm. but also my sisters and my brothers to consider the fact that not so long ago, it wasn't inconceivable that people like you and I, Maurice, mm-hmm. And I particularly, a woman, black, of African descent, would not have access to good education, to housing, to a job, to living in safety. So given the strides that have been made towards equality and in some sense equity, We really need to make sure that we continue to push forward in nonviolent ways to protest for our rights and the rights of our children and our grandchildren in all avenues that are possible and are available to us, including the electoral process. When we think about the word leadership, leadership is both a noun, right, it describes who we are, mm-hmm. and a verb, what we do. So I always encourage people that we are all leaders, and we know that leaders can't get things done alone. And so we need to join hands and really take a bold step forward, and we can do that by participating in elections in our given countries.
Yeah. I'd like to go to the focus or the theme of this year at the CSW, which is, it's emphasizing accelerating gender equality by addressing poverty and enhancing financing with a gender perspective. Elizabeth, can you maybe share one key action or investment you believe is critical for making significant progress in your area of focus?
Yes, thank you, Maurice. I think that challenging and changing mindsets mm-hmm. is possible, but it requires significant investment and commitment. And so we focus on leadership development of emerging leaders. But I want to start with just a brief illustration. Mm-hmm. As I mentioned, I'm from Tanzania. Mm-hmm. That's where I was born. And our first president was called Mwalimu, which means teacher, Julius Nyerere. He fought for independence, but was also able to help Tanzania secure independence in 1960. Mm-hmm. And we've lived within our borders in peace with one another, 136 different tribes since that time. And my mother and my uncles would attribute this piece to the fact that Nyerere made sure that middle school and high school students, mm. for example, if you're from northern Tanzania, you were placed in southern Tanzania. So you got to live amongst tribes that were not your own tribe. If you're from the east, you were sent to the west. So he zigzagged people across the country. And from a very young age, people got to walk in each other's footsteps, got to understand each other's culture, and it minimized tribalism in my country. Mm. And why is that important? We at the Congressional Hunger Center train leaders, and we work with NGOs, we place these young emerging leaders in the Global South, and they're able to work in the communities, learn about the communities. And so when they come back to the U.S. and they get jobs here, they're able to represent, and they're able to think about the programmatic and policy solutions with more understanding because they walked in the steps of others. So what I would like to see is investment that enables us to bring Global South leaders, emerging leaders, to the U.S., to other Global North countries, so that they can receive training here, not just academic, but hands-on training. And they can really learn and see that and see how decisions are made, see how life is lived here, and take that knowledge back. And I think that those shared experiences between these young emerging leaders as equals will be really powerful in helping us make strides, meaningful strides towards localization.
Elizabeth, I'm listening to you now for the second time. The first one was during the panel, and what I feel in here is a lot of passion. And so I would like to understand, where does your drive come from?
My drive comes from my father. My father and mother had four daughters, right? Tanzanian culture is very, and say Tanzanian culture, it's almost a ridiculous statement because there's no such thing as Tanzanian culture because so many tribes and anything, but very patriarchal. And he had four daughters, and he was the oldest man, eldest child in the family. So he's basically, he had no sons to carry his name forward. But my father always told us that what matters about the child is the quality of the child, not the gender of the child. So he told us we could do anything and be anything we wanted to be. And he supported us and my mother all along the way. And so what drives me is this quote. It's actually from the Bible. It says, to whom much is given, much is required, right? And I have been given a lot. And I've been exposed to so many different ways of thinking. I've been told that I can do anything I want. And so I want to use that privilege to really share, mentor, encourage. If Maurice, you would give me a chance. I want to share this example, yes, this story. Yeah. So 2 years ago, I was in Tanzania. I was working there and dealing a lot with a lot of issues around climate change and its negative impact on agriculture. So I've been studying bamboo farming for a long time for many reasons. It grows quickly. It sequesters carbon. It helps restore soils. It has so many uses. Some bamboo varieties are strong as steel, can be used in construction. Other can be used in paper manufacturing. So I was introducing the growing of bamboo to a community. And as a project lead, one of the very first thing I needed to do was to secure the land, right? Fence it so that the livestock that are moving around, the cows, the goats, won't eat the bamboo. So I hired all these young men to come and help fence the bamboo, fence the farm. And they told me, first, why are we growing bamboo? We should be growing corn and beans, even though the previous year's crop had failed. And so I had to battle with them and argue with them and talk with them about what the value of bamboo is. That was one. Number two, they told me, these are very young men, we will not take orders from a woman, a mere woman. And I worked with them every day for like 14 hours a day for a month. I lost 20 pounds in the process, which was a blessing to me. But every day I dealt with that pushback about, you're a woman, you can't possibly know anything about construction. And I said, I want to learn. You're taking jobs away from our young men. I said, I want to learn. I want to work alongside you. And I mixed concrete. I raised up posts. I fenced 10-acre piece of land with them for a month. And what I realized is they needed a role model who would allow them to express themselves, and sometimes in very disrespectful manner, but would also listen to them and show them a different way. And so I am motivated by the fact that change requires commitment, and I'm willing to make that commitment.
But thanks for sharing that story. That's great. Wonderful. Talking about youth, you were alluding to the children upstairs now presenting. During our session on Tuesday, there were a lot of young people in the room as well, which was great. How do you see the role of youth in gender equality, in reaching this SDG number 5? How do you see that?
Youth are our future, and youth are fearless. And they have more access to information than we had growing up, than we even have today. And they have so many increasingly well-informed ideology on topics that, we won't even entertain, right? And so I think that youth are not only fearless, they are important to this fight, to the progress that we will make. And we need to really support them. We need to be their strongest champions. We need to be their cover, their safe havens. We need to encourage and build them up. Every journey is different. Some youth are model youth. They do everything, they check all the right boxes. And other youths are rebels, right? But people mature at different stages. And so what we want to do is continue to amplify the good in them. And as the rough edges get smoothed over, I think some of the most challenging youth, the ones who probably keep their parents up at night, are fighters. And I want to encourage teachers and parents to really see that resistance as a fuel that they will need in life, as opposed to something that needs to be squashed, right, and tamped down.
Okay, great. Music is very important to me, so I always have a question about music as well. If I ask you to come up with a piece of music or a song, that inspires you or reflects your journey in this, around gender equality, which song or piece of music would that be, and can you explain why?
This is a really hard one. So I'm going to ask for your grace here and say, instead of music, I have a poem that inspired me. So maybe somebody has put this to music, or we'll put this to music. But I love the work of Maya Angelou and the poem Still I Rise. Okay. And so I just want to, if I can, share the last two, I guess you could call them verses in the poem. And it says, out of the huts of history's shame, I rise. Up from a past that's rooted in pain, I rise. I'm a black ocean, leaping and wide, welling and swelling, I bear the tide. Leaving behind the nights of terror and fear, I rise into a daybreak that's wondrously clear, I rise. Bringing the gifts that my precious ancestors gave, I am the dream and the hope of the slaves. I rise, I rise, I rise. That poem is particularly significant to me because, like others, and I've had a very privileged life, so I want to acknowledge that, we've all gone through life, and nobody comes through it unscathed. And we've had bumps along the road, be it when I was a kid and in school in Tanzania and always ranked last in class and told by teachers that your head is made of cement. Nothing can penetrate it. Nothing good is ever going to come out of you. Nothing. It's not worth investing in you. To challenges I faced in the workplace of discrimination or, you name it. Just life. And it creates a lot of pain, creates a lot of shame. But we have to keep rising, because when we look behind us and think about all those who have gone before us, for me to be sitting here before you, I don't have a reason to not keep fighting. And so this poem says, leaving behind nights of terror and fear, and that means different things to different people, I rise.
That's great. Thank you.
You're welcome, Maurice.
What I hope this podcast will also do is connect people. So, I'm connecting you now with the listeners. But I also try to connect my guests with each other. So I have a question for you from a previous guest. So I will show you the video.
What is one connection between the international stage and the national stage that you think is going particularly well in the context of women?
So the connection between the international stage and the
national stage,
I think solidarity has significantly improved. Mm-hmm. So I think that we've made great strides there. I think that there are more dialogues that are being had between the international and the national stage to really seek to understand. We've heard the term participatory a lot this week, and I think that's we've made great strides in that respect. Yes.
Okay. Great. And now I'm going to film you as well, and yeah, your question for the next guest.
Thank you. My question is, what would it take, or what would need to be true, for there to be more representation in not only the content, but also the speakers at NGO CSW 69 of Global South practitioners, actual practitioners who are the ones implementing the work in the field.
Okay. Thank you. Yeah, as I mentioned to you, the episodes, the talks during this week, you know, they're shorter than I normally do, and then kind of get still a lot of information out of you. I came up with, I think, five mm-hmm. or six rapid-fire questions. So what I'm asking you to do is really, if I ask for one word, stick mm-hmm. with one word, yes, no, and then you're allowed to come back to one of those quick question, rapid fire. Okay, here we go. In one word, what do you think is the biggest barrier to gender equality globally?
Indifference.
Yes or no? Can technology significantly accelerate gender equality?
Yes.
Who is one person that has significantly influenced your approach to gender equality?
My father.
What's one book you recommend everyone reads to understand gender equality better?
Hood Feminism by Mickey Kendall.
In three words, how do you envision the future of gender equality?
Promising, inclusive, hopeful.
If you could change one thing about the world today to advance gender equality, what would it be?
Say that again?
If you could change one thing about the world today to advance gender equality, what would it be?
For people to support gender equality without first having to understand everything about what gender is.
Last one. What message would you send to your future self 5 years from now regarding your work in gender equality?
Keep pushing on. Love along the way. See, seek, and support others.
Okay. Is there one question that you would like to go back to? No? Okay. Great. Then before we part our ways, and you know, really thank you for your willingness to talk with me today and everything you do. Is there maybe one question that I should have asked you that I didn't?
I can't. I apologize, Maurice. It's been a long week.
And you answered many questions.
I answered many questions this week. Yes. Yeah. Yes. Thank you.
Okay. I would like to.
Great. That's a great question, though. Yeah.
I'd like to thank you very much.
Thank you.
Thank you for listening to Walk.
talk, listen, please check us out on 100mile.org or follow us on Facebook or Instagram.